It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Is it possible for a network news anchor to mislead the public about his experiences covering the war in Iraq and somehow maintain his credibility? That is the question facing NBC after it announced this week the network was suspending nightly news host Brian Williams for 6 months for claiming an RPG had struck his helicopter, when in fact it had not. What does this episode say about the state of network news, where reporting the news may not be enough in an arena where the prize is profits and ratings, and one way to get there is to make the anchorman a star and participant in news events? And what do lesser-known war correspondents who find themselves in harm's way on a regular basis think of Williams' fabrications? I'm joined now in Studio A by Jeff Ritter, Chair of Communications, Media, and Technology at La Roche College. Jeff, good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Paul.
And joining us by phone from Istanbul, Turkey, is a Pittsburgh area native and freelance journalist who has covered wars and unrest in the Middle East, South Asia, and Latin America, Carmen Gentile. Carmen Gentile, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh at wesa.fm. On Twitter at esspgh. Hashtag EPLive. Again, the number 412-246-2002. What do you think about the six-month suspension of anchor Brian Williams? Does the punishment fit the crime, in your opinion? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Carmen, let me start with you. You were hit in the face by the very same kind of ordinance, a rocket-propelled grenade that Mr. Williams claimed had struck his helicopter. When it became evident that he had lied about this, how did it make you feel?
I have been enraged ever since. I thought that perhaps my fury would subsist after a certain amount of time, but it has not. In fact, I just penned an op-ed for the Post-Gazette that's in today's paper saying that there are a number of things I would like to do to Brian Williams for having fabricated that story. It is an insufferable injustice, not to just somebody like me, but to anybody who's ever had to endure war, be it soldiers or civilians, or anybody chronicling a conflict. That guy should never see the light of journalism again.
Is there a built-in resentment among correspondents embedded with U.S. forces for long stretches, like yourself, who are in the line of fire of the, some might say, pretty boy network anchor who shows up long enough to be on camera and say, hey, I was there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not gonna say that I don't resent them for that. That's absolutely true. There's a lot of people who do all this legwork in order for someone like Brian Williams to show up for a day or two, maybe interview a four-star general and do a token walk around with some troops. They lay the groundwork for weeks and months ahead so that he can do that, and he gets all the credit. I mean, I'm talking about the people at his network who suffer and sacrifice and risk their lives so that he can feel like a star and play war reporter for the day. And then he gets the accolades and he gets the paycheck. And I'm glad he got caught, and I hope he never works again.
Jeff Ritter, is Brian Williams, is what happened here truly representative of what happens with and I think what Carmen is saying, there are plenty of people who will back Carmen up on that you get the guy that shows up in the trench coat long enough to be seen on camera and say I was there and move on. But is that indicative of all television network correspondents?
Well, it's probably, Brian Williams is the necessary evil of the, entire circus of confusion that's TV news today. This is a business that's under huge pressures to gain viewers. They're losing viewers every day. And, yes, they need a pretty boy face. They need a nice-looking anchor. They need somebody who attracts an audience. They've also got to have that trust. And so now they're dealing with the probably a lot of confusion about that. Do they need are they willing to keep him? No, they're not. If he lost the trust of people, they can't.
But they do seem willing to keep him because they've suspended him for 6 months, but they have not fired him. I mean, the timeline here could be that they're going to suspend him long enough, or they have suspended him, so it'll be long enough for this to – well, I'm sure what NBC is hoping – for it to die down. And then 6 months later, well, we're getting into fall and, you know, the big ramp up to the 15-16, you know, television season.
Americans love a comeback story, and nothing's going to be higher viewers than his first night back on the news. And the people are going to want to see that.
How can NBC afford not to fire Brian Williams?
Yeah, oh, they've got the huge investment in him. And, yeah, they can't lose that. They don't want to lose that. And they know he's probably still got credibility or at least enjoyability factor with people.
But the question is, how can they afford not to fire him just for the sake of preserving their own credibility? How can you, if it's been proven and he's admitted that he lied about being in a helicopter that was hit by an RPG, how do you possibly get past that? How does the viewer forget about that?
They're going to find a way to bring him back, I'm sure, and say he's paid his dues. He's made amends for it, and I think they will bring him back, and he'll be accepted.
Carmen, you wanted to jump in.
You're working from the supposition that network news actually has credibility. There's no credibility left in network news.
Network news
used to have
at all, Carmen.
The best. They used to have the best newscast. For years on end, I talked to older folks who work in that industry who have told me that they have witnessed the decline of their industry over these last 15 to 20 years that it resembles nothing what it was during its heyday. Now, am I saying that there's never any credible news on there? No, but as a whole, anytime that I do catch a network news broadcast anymore, there's nothing there that I haven't already learned about hours before. I just don't see that happening. 60 Minutes still does good work from time to time. I think that product has suffered a little bit over the years, but in terms of network, what are they producing that we haven't all as news consumers already know about?
Oh, it's always been
6:30 in the evening. They're not telling me anything new.
Yeah, it's always been a limited perspective of what goes on for the day from Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow on. It's a limited perspective. It's something that gives people have a habit of viewing and makes them feel like they're informed. That's the main goals of it, and selling products.
But wasn't there a heyday where there was credibility? I mean, didn't Edward R. Murrow, before there was television network news, I mean, didn't he go to Europe and report before the start of World War II to report on things that Americans had no idea about? And then as a television correspondent, did he not go to Korea? Did Walter Cronkite not go to Vietnam and say, hey, this is an unwinnable war, to the point where President Johnson decided I'm not going to run for president again because if I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost America?
No, it's been a very significant force in American culture and politics for years and years.
So what happened? Why are we seeing the decline?
It conflated with an entertainment years ago. The movie network is the perfect prescient example of what was going to happen to TV news. Almost all of it has come true.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, almost all of it has come true from that. And the entertainment division is more important. And they have a lot of control or a lot of input into the news. It's an entertainment medium. If you want to be informed, you've got to take control of your life yourself. And now, of course, the internet and things like that make it possible. But you've got to get perspectives from multiple areas. But TV news is a habit. TV news is a thing mostly for older people still now who want to feel like they're being informed. They're part of a public. They're part of the country and the national conversation and feeling a little bit important themselves. But it's always been limited.
I watch it every. I watch almost every night. So what are you saying? What does that say about me? I don't know.
people like habits.
I guess. Jeff Ritter is chair of communications, media, and technology at La Roche College, and also with us by phone from Istanbul, Turkey, is a freelance journalist from the Pittsburgh area, Carmen Gentile, who has reported for USA Today, radio networks like ABC, where I heard one of your reports recently, Carmen. He's covered unrest and conflict in the Middle East, South Asia, Latin America, put himself in harm's way and, in fact, was hit in the face by an RPG while embedded as a reporter in Afghanistan. To join our conversation, 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Tim in Pittsburgh. Tim, thanks for waiting. You're on with Jeff Ritter and Carmen Gentile.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for having me on the show, Paul. I really enjoy this program. I guess my comment is just I'd like the panel to discuss it as well. It just seems like an appropriate bookend for our adventure in Iraq. I mean, we went into there without real rigorous analysis from the media and no real discussion about whether there were truth to the claims that were being made for this war. And, you know, now we're at the tail end as we're winding down, and it just seems like a false evaluation of our values over, you know, this is a big issue versus the media missing the entire lead up to the war and not really doing their part to, I think, rectify that. So I guess my comment is just, did the media lose credibility at the beginning of this thing, or is this really the end of their credibility? It seems like it was lost long ago.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. Are you saying that the media just simply didn't do its due diligence, Tim? Well, we lost Tim. I guess the question is, and Tim brings up an interesting point, and thank you for that phone call, Jeff Ritter. If the media wasn't complicit in the lie that people say the Bush administration put out there, that the war in Iraq was predicated on, that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which were later that was discredited, those weapons were not found. So is it that the media just didn't do its due diligence to investigate that properly, or that the media was in some way complicit?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. The media was certainly supremely well manipulated by the administration, and probably felt they had to go along, or wanted to go along, and felt that putting up an external investigation of their own, or trying to look at it from different perspectives, would not be well received by the audience. So they went along with what was going on with public opinion too. Instead of trying to shape or form opinion, they wanted to just reflect opinion, which was already being formed by the administration's public relations and manipulation of information. I think we may look back on this era from the beginning of the Iraq War to the Brian Williams fiasco. It might be the time period when that books are written about that really shows this is the end of monolithic news, of large news organizations that had all their credibility and worked with the government. And after this, everything dissipated into smaller outlets and resources for people to get their own information.
Carmen Gentile, Tim is saying, why focus on Brian Williams? You know, the horse was out of the barn 10 years ago when we went to war with Iraq, and that whatever's happening now is really of little or no consequence. From your perspective, what about that?
Oh, absolutely. There was that period when the entire news media industry was led by the nose and was not asking the right questions or enough questions about the initial lead up to the invasion of Iraq, and then soon thereafter, we collectively, and I say myself as well, because I was working in Washington at the time. This is before I went overseas and was covering the wars on the ground. I was working in D.C., and I guess I'm part of the problem then. We were, for example, Judith Miller at the New York Times, who was leading the charge with her coverage about weapons of mass destruction, who was getting all her information fed to her by senior officials in the Bush administration, who just used her, and she was duped, and the rest of us were duped. And that is the reason why we're in the situation we're in right now with ISIS.
But what about the very salient points, but I think we're maybe getting off the topic here a little bit. So is then Brian Williams issue not an issue? That's what Tim is saying. He's saying
it's definitely an issue, and I will be the first to admit that it's a very personal issue with me. I wrote that opinion piece today, and I made it clear that it is a personal issue. It's a personal issue. Like I said, for me in particular and for my colleagues and those servicemen and women that I've spoken to about this situation and who feel as though they were also discredited in a sense because of his actions and behavior, they're the ones who made the real sacrifices, and he's the one that's claiming all the glory. It's the stolen valor syndrome that is... to borrow a phrase from the military. Is it as big an issue as what is going on in Iraq right now? Of course not. But it is also endemic of a certain culture that is pervading news media right now, where the flash is more important than the substance of the story, and that's television through and through. I've worked in network news. I've worked in cable news. I know that there are a number of things that are way more important when it comes to putting something on the air than actually what you're talking about.
Daryl on Twitter says, Williams' credibility is different than his utility. Interesting point there. Let's go back to the phones. We have Elizabeth in Donegal. Elizabeth, welcome. You're on with Carmen Gentile and Jeff Ritter.
Yes. I wanted to comment on the Brian Williams issue.
Right.
I think it's gotten horrendously blown out of proportion. And there's one thing that's been written about that doesn't get any press, and that is this issue of memory. And how can we count on our memory? This is a man who, granted, he knows what's going on in the world, presumably, but he's never been under fire. And if I were in a group of helicopters and an RPG hit one of them, isn't it possible that this is just a screwed-up memory and that he didn't do this on purpose? I mean, in the small arena, it's a question of just how important is this? And in the larger arena, it's a question of why are we depending on the network news for the actual news? And where else are we going to get it?
Well, those are two. You're making two very interesting points. Let's start with the first one about Brian Williams. You were not the first, Elizabeth, to point to, and Brian Williams has said this himself, that he misremembered what happened. So I think, Carmen, you would probably understand the idea of the haze of war as much as anybody. I mean, is it possible that this could have affected Brian Williams in a way that he actually did misremember what exactly happened to him?
No. And the reason why is because he retold that same story right after it happened, and he told it correctly the first time. And then as the years went on, he decided to embellish it a little bit more just to see how much more he can get away from to pad his stats as a war correspondent. No, yeah. That is not a misremembrance.
Well, when you're sitting on the couch opposite Letterman, and Letterman is so thrilled you're there, and he's being so nice to you, and he's so impressed by you, I think you just want to impress him even more. And he did. Letterman let out a golly or something when he heard about the RPG.
I think he said, my goodness.
My goodness. So, it probably happens to lots of people, but you're not the face. Most of us are not the face and person in the front of a multi-billion-dollar organization that's there to certainly make a profit, but also in most people's minds, or a lot of people's minds, part of the process of democracy, of being informed and then being able to make decisions. And if your only biggest information source is a half hour of news in the evening and then look into the sports section later, it's an important face.
Well, then where else should people be turning for their news?
Well, people should be looking at multiple newspapers, multiple websites, perspectives they don't agree with, outlets that mostly they agree with or don't agree with, the editorial side. You just have to look at myriad sources today to be informed as much as you can.
Should we really buy, your point about being on Letterman and being flattered and then going off and telling a story that or should know is not true? I mean, should he really get off the hook for that? I mean, the idea that he's being flattered by the host, if you're claiming that something happened to you that didn't happen, you would think that somebody who's put in a position of having to make all sorts of important decisions on a daily basis as the managing editor of NBC News would have better judgment, wouldn't you?
You'd think he would, and he'd have a little voice in his head saying, don't exaggerate, don't go overboard, but it's probably irresistible. That's the time.
Let's go to Joan in Pittsburgh. Joan, welcome to the show. How are you?
My late husband, Arthur Morse, was the executive producer of CBS Reports and worked with Edward R. Murrow. And Murrow was an amazing man. He did all the things you said, but he also was a figurehead. He also was a star, and that was his persona. And my feeling is that this thing has been blown out of proportion with
Which thing? With the Brian Williams?
The Brian Williams thing, I think. I think the news media hits with venom on anything and zeroes in and blows things up out of proportion. And I think the poor guy made a mistake. I think this was part of his persona. He built on it, and it's not a sin. I think we all tell little white lies.
I'm really honored that you called, because I think it's great that your husband, you said it was Arthur Morris?
Yes, Arthur Morris.
Worked with Edward R. Murrow. It's a fabulous perspective. But yeah. I mean, Jeff, maybe, or Carmen, maybe you'd want to chime in on this, but I mean, a little white lie, isn't this more than just a little white lie here?
I think it got blown up from something that was small into something quite large.
Well, it's a human story. It's the kind of story.
Just slightly, I think, without John Stewart to keep us on track.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a lot more trouble with these kind of incidents.
Yeah. Well, it's a human story. It's the kind of story people like, because it's about the frailties of somebody who's powerful and making a mistake and not having the right conscious mind to control himself. And it's just the kind of story people like, and that's why the media gloms onto. Why are people talking about it? Because it's interesting. Because you think about what would you have done? How could he have done that? So that's normal for news and information, that people like that kind of story. I'm not surprised it gets this much attention.
Joan, thank you for that call. Great to Carmen. I would like to, I'm sure you have a reaction to what she's saying.
I do. When something happens in your respective industry, be you a doctor or a lawyer, or in this case in the news media, you take a particular interest in it, and of course, the news media is going to take interest in something that directly affects the news media. And is it being blown out of proportion? To some folks, it is. To myself, this is an issue that, like I have said time and time again, that this is, strikes me very personally. Personally offended, and it offends a number of people with whom I work and people I respect, my colleagues and people I've known over the years covering conflict. So, yes. If by chance you think that the media is blowing it out of proportion, well, conveying information and conveying sentiment is what we do for a living. And so you could either choose not to listen to it or to hear what we have to say in this situation. Of course, we're gonna take an interest in it. Just like, for example, when there was the tragic news yesterday that Bob Simon had died in New York in a car crash, CBS broke into its broadcast, and a obviously shaken Scott Pelley let people know that one of their colleagues had died. Now, to many people probably watching television that night, it wasn't of that great concern for them, because maybe they didn't even know who he was. But it obviously was a big deal to the people at CBS and to everybody who knows Bob Simon's work and his place in the industry and in the history of the industry. So yes, does the news media sometimes talk about itself too much? Yes, I'll be the first to admit that.
But you're saying not necessarily in this case. And I'm glad you brought up Bob Simon, Carmen, because this was a guy who told a story that was true about who did live through one of the horrors of war. He was covering the first Iraq war and was taken hostage and tortured for 40 days. Does this make the Brian Williams situation look even worse? Because here's a guy who was a network correspondent, a 60 Minutes correspondent, who did have a story to tell, and that people may, you know, if not looking back, looking ahead, may question what correspondents are telling them because of the lie that Brian Williams told.
Absolutely. I think that there's a trickle-down effect to what Brian Williams did, because I think that in the minds of many people, he represents somehow the pinnacle of the industry. And they think that if he's a liar, then we're all liars.
Yeah, and go to the museum in Washington and see the wall of journalists that have been killed in war situations. And, you know, you're not going to find a more honorable group of people You know, people have been trying to inform the world and suffered immensely because of it, their families too. And so it does have an importance to a lot of people that say for Brian to fabricate anything. It dishonors a lot of people, and I understand the offense.
Chris on Twitter raises an interesting point. Brian Williams, does he have a mental health issue? This isn't the first time he's done this, and we don't know for sure. There are reports that indicate that he fabricated stories from Hurricane Katrina, about dead bodies floating by in the French Quarter and that kind of thing, which may or may not be true. We don't know. That hasn't been thoroughly vetted yet. But I'm not one to comment on a mental health issue, Jeff. I don't know.
Well, we're going to go back. I'm sure people are going to go back and look at some stories and look and see what could have been fabricated in the past. What if there's a backup for some of the things that he said? If this shows a pattern, then he's probably in more trouble. But if they can't prove that, as I said before, I think 6 months, he'll be back.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guests on the program today are Jeff Ritter, who is the chair of Communications, Media, and Technology at La Roche College. Also with us by phone from Istanbul, Turkey, is Carmen Gentile, a freelance journalist who has covered wars in the Middle East, South Asia, and Latin America. And we are talking about the situation involving Brian Williams, suspended earlier this week by NBC for 6 months and possibly could be brought back. The question is, should he be brought back? Is a six-month suspension enough? And is there any way that his credibility can be restored? You can join the conversation with our guests at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Daryl in Canonsburg. Daryl, welcome. How are you?
I heard a stat yesterday about the amount of times that Brian Williams has been on Letterman and Carter, Leno, etc. I think there's a disturbing trend of the over-pop culturalization of politics and news. You know, those professions where you're supposed to be above the fray. I cringe when I see the President of the United States on a talk show because I think there's a certain aura that you should take and not get dragged down into the muck and the mire. And I think it's a trend that's accelerating.
What about that as a trend, Jeff?
Yeah, certainly. Pop culture is, you know, it's the water around the goldfish for our everyday life. We're enmeshed in pop culture, you know, not most of our day. And it's not surprising to see at this point politics is a major part of it. Entertainment and politics and news have all overlapped completely at this point. And it's a real challenge to be somebody who is well-informed without being manipulated today by all of those things conflating.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about the strange case of Brian Williams, a network news anchor who, for whatever reason, during the war in Iraq, claimed an RPG had struck his helicopter when, in fact, it had not. And this episode has cost him, at least for now, a six-month suspension from the NBC News nightly news anchor desk. The question is, can he be brought back? Should he be brought back for what he has done? 412-246-2002 is the number to call to join our conversation with Jeff Ritter, Chair of Communications, Media, and Technology at La Roche College, here with us in Studio A, and Carmen Gentile, a freelance war correspondent, joining us by phone from Istanbul, Turkey. Let's go to the phones. We have George in Moon Township. George, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. Good show today on Essential.
Thank you, sir.
You previously identified me as a World War II vet. I'm not quite that old. Vietnam vet.
Oh, Vietnam. Well, it says on the screen, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but it says on the screen World War II. So
right.
I beg your pardon.
I didn't identify it clearly.
Vietnam just as well.
I think there might be something else working here that none of your guests mentioned that I've observed over the last 30 years. And that was, I had an experience of a guy working for a corporation I worked for who, as we found out in the end, had trumped up a story that he was in Vietnam. And when we had his records checked and everything, it turned out that he hadn't even graduated from high school yet. And I've seen that thing, that kind of younger male guy who thinks he missed something in a particular conflict, and he wants to, like, try to stretch the truth of what he touches on it, or even create a completely false story. I mean, there's been countless things us as vets know about some guys that have imitated, you know, and made up stories about their involvement in conflicts, even to the point of wearing medals and regalia from the military and everything, and it turned out to be complete falsehoods. And I've seen it in the media, and I've seen it in other people too, across the board. And I think it's a generational thing that some of these guys that don't participate in a conflict think they really missed a historical thing and wanted to participate. And I just wanted to get your reflections from your guests.
Well, it's interesting, George, because certainly we've seen this come up with politicians and other prominent figures, people running for office, exaggerating, if not lying about their service, certainly exaggerating their war record, the legend of the quote-unquote legend of Tail Gunner Joe McCarthy, who is said to have made up all sorts of stories about what he actually did during World War II. Jeff, what about the history of this that George is asking about?
Well, all kinds of things, from college presidents to corporation presidents, people claiming they have degrees and PhDs and all kinds of experiences, and then being found out later. You could start an industry of looking up the details of people's claims and probably be pretty successful at finding false claims almost anywhere you look. It's probably pretty common, and it's just, again, part of human nature to try to deceive others, try to make yourself more than something, more than what you are for yourself and for others.
What about the history of this, though, Jeff? Has there ever been an episode like this where an acclaimed journalist, a network news anchor sitting in a chair once held by Huntley and Brinkley, John Chancellor and Tom Brokaw, has told such an outrageous lie?
Definitely not. This we're in a new era in that regard, I think. But it may not be the last time it happens. But yeah, I think, you know, again, his involvement with the entertainment field, with being on 30 Rock, being on David Letterman, being somewhat of a comedian himself, all those perspectives that he has on himself are probably partly responsible for him overblowing this.
Carmen Gentile, what were the odds that Brian Williams might have been able to get away with his lie, or is it impossible when you are embedded with troops because sooner or later someone will rat you out?
Of course he was going to get caught. That's what makes this just inconceivable to me, that he would think he would get away with it, especially in this modern age. When with social media, there's so many different ways in which you can call somebody out on a lie like this. There had been talk for years that he had been overblowing this story. And from people to whom I've spoken who are closely connected to this story, they know that there's been concern about the way he's been telling this story. And those who were on the soldiers that were on his helicopter, they knew it for years that he had been exaggerating and just misrepresenting that story. Until finally, they called him out on it.
Jeff,
and he thought he would just get away with it. It shows an amazing amount of arrogance on Brian Williams' part to think that no one's going to call him out on these and perhaps other fabrications.
Jeff, some have compared.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Jeff, some have compared the Brian Williams story to what happened with Dan Rather, who reported a story about George W. Bush's military service or lack thereof based on a source that was later discredited. Is that a fair comparison?
Well,
with Dan Rather, he may have made a mistake, but was he trying to mislead anybody in the same way that Brian Williams?
Well, that's the suspicion, was that Dan Rather was reflecting his own bias against Bush and looking for a story that would help that, and he wasn't being as conscientious or diligent as he should have been.
But is that the same as this?
No, I don't think so. And I think both of them had a chance. I think Dan Rather would have had a chance to come back if it wasn't such a political football that he was in. Brian Williams, it's more of a personal mistake, I think, is where he's looking at it.
NBC has had a series of news troubles, from the firing of Ann Curry on the Today Show to removing David Gregory from Meet the Press. By NBC taking swift action against Brian Williams, is this a way of saving face for the network?
They're trying to do anything they can to keep on top of their business. The big three are not as big as they used to be. The number of viewers is dwindling. People are going to other sources. Young people don't care at all about TV news, local or national. So, you know, when you have a business that's worth so much money and been so historical and important, they're trying anything they can at this point. And I wouldn't have been surprised if they tried something different. They're just working all the angles at this point, I think.
Carmen, if Brian Williams does return to the anchor desk, can anyone believe him in the future, especially when it comes to covering the story in a war zone?
No, absolutely not. They will never put him in a situation where he would have to be the voice from a conflict zone. I can't even in the degraded way in which news is being presented on the networks these days for entertainment than it is for information. There's no way they could do that. He's a reader. That's it. He's a suit and a haircut. He can't be trusted.
Last question for Jeff Ritter in just 15 seconds. If not NBC, what is the lesson here for other news organizations?
Oh, just tell your people. You're a public face of our organization. Don't exaggerate. Be careful. You've got to be squeaky clean today if you're going to be on top of an organization.
Jeff Ritter is Chair of Communications, Media, and Technology at La Roche College, joining us in Studio A, and with us by phone from Istanbul, Turkey, freelance journalist Carmen Gentile. Gentlemen, thanks to both of you for a fascinating discussion.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
We're out of time. Back again tomorrow with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.